and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Just one more sleep until the World Cup final.
How old are you?
I'm a baby
think,
when it comes to the World Cup final.
How old do you think we are? One more sleep?
A lot older than me. Stevie Nicol, Kate Murray. We will be hearing from Julien Laurent in just a moment. But this is the cover of L'Équipe in France. It is Messi against Mbappe. And when we focus on France, everyone trained for them today after a number of players had been struck by illness. So we want to talk to Julien Laurent about this. He is with us now from Qatar. Is that it then, Jules? Are all the players feeling well again and they're ready to go?
Well, they all trained today, that's for sure. They were all there training behind closed doors, not too far away from here where we are actually. They all trained. Deschamps was happy. Maybe he was slightly blown out of proportion earlier, but we know that Konaté was really not well still this morning, to be fair. But at least everybody was there. They're happy. Tchouaméni is okay now after the problem he had in his hip. Theo Hernandez is okay after the little niggle in his knee. Giroud also had a little niggle in his knee, but he trained without problem. So Deschamps is happy because at least the 24 players who were there are available to play that final.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about Giroud, because it is Stevie's love-hate player. A little knock to the knee in training. Is he going to be okay?
He's going to be okay, Kate. The only thing is, at training tonight, I'm being told that Deschamps tried a different attack than to what he's done through the whole tournament when Giroud was actually playing with the Serbs. You know, at time they do the starters against the Serbs when he's the last training before the game. And the front three for the starters for the team were Mbappe central, Dembele on the right-hand side, and then Marcus Thuram, who came on and did really well against Morocco in the semi-final. He was the one starting on the left. So Giroud was with the Serbs, so on the bench. Mbappe had moved from the left-hand side to the center. And you still have two very quick wingers in Thuram and Dembele. The rest was the same. Rabiot, Tchouaméni, and Griezmann, of course, in midfield. The back four would be Koundé, Théo, Varane, and Upamecano, unless Konaté can sneak in and start ahead of Upamecano, but I think it's very unlikely right now. So the only change, really, if that happens, and I'm still quite sceptical, that he will drop Giroud, but that Giroud could be on the bench and Marcus Thuram starting.
Oh, do you love or hate that Giroud could be on the bench, Stevie?
Well, if I'm Giroud, I'm not a happy camper, because I'm going to guess that this has got something to do with the fact that Mr. Mbappe doesn't want to defend. That's kind of my thinking, because why would you change it? Something that's been so successful, all of a sudden, yes, I know it's a final, but you're going to change it? And are you changing it because one guy doesn't want to defend? Really?
Okay, so I want to go to Jules on this, because it's something we've been talking about this week, Mbappe not wanting to defend. Let's clarify this situation, Jules. If it's something he actively does not want to do, we're taking a look here at the fewest interventions in the defending 30s, top of the list ahead of Depay, Ronaldo, Lionel Messi. This is an outfield players per 90 minutes.
Shout out to Akram Afif.
Yeah, shout out of Qatar.
Yeah. But what?
I know, sorry for not putting his name out there with the rest of them there. But Jules, is this something that's just down to Mbappe, or is it actually to do with Deschamps' tactics?
No, it's part of the plan. They discussed it before. I mean, it's pretty obvious just to watch the game, whether you watch on television or in the stadium like us. If you keep your eyes on Kylian when he loses the ball or when the team doesn't have the ball, I mean, sometimes he will jog towards his side and the player that he's supposed to mark, for example. But very often he doesn't. And I think Deschamps has sort of integrated that into the way the team plays without the ball out of possession and where they press. And maybe that's why they don't press too high, because Kylian would not do the pressing. This is part of it. We've seen other players or the big players not doing it either. I can understand why Craig was raging the other night. I know Stevie is not happy either, and I completely get it, but I guess Deschamps also had to accommodate his best player in a way.
Is it the fact, though, that if he isn't defending, he is actually still keeping the opposition defenders busy and therefore keeping them pretty much out of the game anyway?
Yeah, but you can still do that and get in a passing lane. So you can still be an option and an outlet for a quick counterattack by being in the correct passing lane. And I think, now, there is no change in it now, by the way, because if you've allowed this to happen up until this point, you don't then address it now. This should have been addressed a long, long time ago. It wasn't. He was given this freedom. But if I were to address it, I would tell I'm not asking you to track back all the way into our 18-yard box. What I'm asking you to do is get in a defensive position where you, at the very least, are denying a pass or denying a space into wide areas. That's all I'm asking you to do. And in order for him to do that as compared to what he does now, I'm talking about a difference in a 10-yard sprint. That's it. That's all I'm asking you to do, Killian. I'm not asking you to go track back. I'm not asking you to go chase people down in a defensive third. I'm just asking you that your starting defensive position is one that allows us to be organized, that allows us to then set up behind the ball correctly, and I think more importantly, allows us to stay balanced. Because the moment that you decide that you're not going to make this effort to 10, 15 yards to cover a passing lane, everybody else has to address that space. Everybody else has to do a little bit extra in order to make sure that everything is covered. So now you're changing the way that the team plays, and now you're affecting the guy on the other side, which in this case is Ousmane Dembele, who has spent a lot of the time in this World Cup in his defensive half because he has to cover ground as well.
Here's the bit that annoys me. It's not the fact that he doesn't defend, because there are lots of players, forwards, who don't want to defend. And we all know, and we've all played with guys who you know don't want to defend. But because they're so good, you do the extra bit of work because they make you successful. But the one thing that 99.999 players don't do is turn round and tell you, I'm not defending. It goes against every single principle about a professional footballer. Every single thing. And to turn round and say that he's not going to do it is where I have the real problem. And the fact that maybe because of this guy, who may win you the World Cup, but he may lose it for you as well, because if you're arranging your team to suit this guy, you might slip up. And I hope they do.
Oh.
I hope they do. I was teetering. Well, who did I really want to win? Well, I did want Messi to win, but I like watching France as well. That's taking me over the edge. I hope Messi wins this. I hope Argentina wins this, because what Mbappe's doing goes against every single thing a professional footballer should do.
Very anti-French sentiment from Stevie.
I'm telling you, I absolutely
Mbappe.
Am.
Let me stick with you, Stevie, because I want to talk to you about Argentina, said to have been experimenting with a back five in training. Do you take too much from this? Because they're said to have experimented with a few different formations. Will they be going with that necessarily, if that's what we're seeing from them in the training session ahead of the final?
I don't think so. I think sometimes you use that as a bit of a ruse, you know, because they'll know that everybody's watching. You know, Jules was saying tonight that the French had Mbappe up in the middle. He's maybe doing that so that Argentina play a three in this final, thinking they're going to do that. I think Argentina should go with what suits them best, and that is a back four. And if it's a back four and Mbappe plays in the middle, then guess what? You just have to do what you would normally do anyway. You've got to double up on the guy. But it's not going to completely change the way Argentina play. So I think Argentina shouldn't be thinking too much about the French or overthinking it. Do what suits you best. Because if you do what you do best, to the best of your ability, whether Mbappe plays wider in the middle, you still win the game.
Jules, it seems as though there's been a lot of talk about this after journalists have been watching the training sessions going around in Qatar. Do you think they would play a back five tomorrow?
Argentina, yeah, I think they're thinking about it. We've said before that Scaloni is the head coach in this World Cup that has changed the most. His teams, his formation, back five, back four. We saw in the semi-final, obviously, the four central midfielders playing in that 4-4-2 formation. Which you do when you adapt to the opposition, which is completely fine. And maybe they think right now the best way to stop Kylian is to play with a back five, to have Romero and Lisandro Martinez on each side of Otamendi to help to close all the half spaces, so Rabiot can't make the runs that he wants, so Griezmann cannot make the usual runs that he makes as well, or that he's made so far in this tournament, coming from deep in that new position. And I have to say, I think the back five could be clever here, but Stevie is right. He might also just go with a 4-4-2 like we saw in the semi-final. He might keep the same midfield as well to just control a bit the midfield and have an extra man there against Tchouameni, Rabiot and Griezmann. And that would make sense as well. I think both of them have a lot of options. But what we've seen is that Deschamps really unless he changes Mbappe for Giroud and Thuram, but the formation will stay the same. Pretty much everything will stay the same. Scaloni, however, has changed already a few things, and you would not be surprised if he does it again for the final.
Would you be surprised, Ale?
No, because you're trying to address Kylian Mbappe, and you're trying to address the fact that while defensively he's not helping France, he is putting himself in a position where he's trying to go on a counter and exploit his ability to run in behind. And so you're trying to create a natural double team on the right-hand side with Nahuel Molina and then Cuti Romero covering that space. So that then if indeed that's a space that France is going to attack, you've already addressed it with the presence of two defenders out there, the central defender that goes out there and then the trailing outside back who's going to be in a position to defend as well. That's what you're trying to do. The issue is that for Argentina, in order to do that, you're sacrificing the control in the midfield that Jules was just talking about. And what was so very good about Argentina against Croatia is the control, or was the control, through that midfield, where you had McAllister and Enzo Fernandez. And in the case of the semifinals, Leandro Paredes was there as well. When you think about Rodrigo de Paul and McAllister, Paredes, Enzo Fernandez, and those guys controlling the midfield, I think that's where Argentina could be most dangerous against France, in winning that battle in the midfield that then limits the impact that Antoine Griezmann has on this game. And then, therefore, the impact that Kylian Mbappe may have, because maybe the outlet pass is not quite available because you're not dominating the midfield. I would go with the midfield four because I think that's where Argentina's at their best. And whenever they do win the ball, if indeed they make this a physical game and then they win the ball, it's through that midfield four that they're able to keep possession of the ball. If you have only three there, I'm not quite sure that Argentina has proven to be good enough to have that 3v3 and actually keep possession for a long period of time.
Now, it feels as though it wouldn't be the eve of a big game if we didn't ask Jules for a combined 11. So we have asked him to do this. I wonder how many players are from Argentina and how many players are from France, Jules. And a lovely picture again.
As always, I've tried to be really objective here. I went for Lloris in goal because at 36 and with all the criticism that he received, I thought he was outstanding in the semi-final and the quarter-final. I've got Molina right back because I think he's when he's played, and that goal against the Dutch, of course, was really good, whether he was as a wing-back or as a right-back. I was very impressed with Varane, considering he was still injured 3 weeks ago. Otamendi, I thought as well, at his age, played really well, and I didn't think he would be at this level. And on the left, despite the silly foul against England on Mason Mount, I still think that Theo Hernandez has had a good World Cup. The midfield three, Enzo has been a revelation if you hadn't seen him play for Benfica earlier this season. And so has been Alexis, the Brighton midfielder, Alexis McAllister, who is so important to this Argentina team with all the movement that he does without the ball even. And then Griezmann in that new position that we mentioned many times. And then the front three, you can play them wherever you want. Julian, Kylian and Messi. It could be Mbappe as a 9, Alvarez as a 9, Mbappe left, Messi right, Messi as a 10 behind the two, whatever you want to do. I think those three, it's a bit unfair on Giroud maybe, but I think those three have been magnificent.
Any complaints with his combined 11?
It's some friendly fire against Olivier Giroud. Conversation about maybe him not starting the final, and now the fact that he doesn't get involved or included in the combined 11. If you're breaking records like Olivier Giroud is doing for France, maybe he deserves a place. I'm saying Olivier Giroud should be a starter not only tomorrow, but certainly in the combined 11 from Julien Laurens.
Stevie?
I would probably just swap one. I would play Rabiot probably instead of Fernandez. And I've not been a big fan of Rabiot, but I think he's been tremendous. I know he missed the semi-final, but I think he's been fantastic. And maybe he's got over the hump, because up until this World Cup, he's not a player that really was very much on my radar. But I would play him in the middle instead of either McAllister or Fernandez. Probably Fernandez.
And since I put Giroud in and took Julian Alvarez out, I'm taking Hugo Lloris out and putting Emiliano Martinez in. I think I trust him more than I do Hugo Lloris. In fact, if I were France, my concern would be that I know Hugo Lloris has a mistake in him at some point, and it hasn't happened just yet. Tomorrow would be the wrong time.
Might Emi Martinez have a booking in him, though?
Yeah, to be fair to Jules, though, you can only go on what they've produced. And I agree 100%. Lloris has got a mistake in him. I also think Otamendi's got a mistake in him as well. But so far, neither of the two of them have made any mistakes. So, Jules, we can't fault you on the because they haven't made mistakes.
Well, we're going to take a look at the odds for this one. We're calling it even Stevens right now. Now, Jules picked against France in the past because he didn't want to jinx his team. Remember that. Now he is picking France to win the final.
Oh, good.
So what are you telling us, Jules, that you actually want Argentina to win this?
No. I mean, I really felt that England were the better team and that they were going to beat us. I promise you, it was not mind games. We've got all our Argentinian friends here from ESPN Argentina, the studios. I've been telling them, all of them, the last 2 days, that we're going to go and crash their party on Sunday and we're going to break their hearts and win this. So I really hope that my boys do it then.
Yeah, well, we know that you two both picked Argentina ahead of tomorrow. Well, we've just heard him tonight. He hates France now, so he's he's definitely going for Argentina.
Come on, Argentina.
He was teetering.
He was teetering, but now he's gone.
I've gone completely off the cliff. Come on, Argentina.
Two-footed into that one. Make sure you join us bright and early tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Eastern, on ESPN2. We will have a full preview of the World Cup final, Argentina taking on France. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid, and Gareth Southgate is set to remain in his role as England manager. He was left to think about his future after the World Cup exit, decided to stay put though. He intends to remain until at least his contract expires after Euro 2024 as we look at his record in major tournaments. Mark Ogden joining us now, and Mark, Jules is still with us. Mark, you didn't hold back on Twitter last week when the statement was put out by the England FA on how proud they were of the boys and of Gareth Southgate. You were pretty critical of what they had to say. What do you think of him staying on?
I was critical. I just felt that the English FA were just too happy to accept a quarter-final finish, and they were pitching it as, you know, the boys did okay, let's give them all a pat on the back. They've had a really good tournament. We're all happy to be here. And I just think it's just a... there's a softness there. There's no ruthlessness at the English FA. And I think, you know, Gareth Southgate has done a great job as England manager. Let's not get away from that. He inherited a mess. He's taken them to a semi-final, a final and a quarter-final. But on each occasion, England have stopped going that next step because the manager, Southgate, has been unable to make the tactical or spot the tactical changes early enough to make a difference. Now, this has got... England have got a really good batch of players, some really good young players. But I fear that they'll go to Euro 2024 with the same thing happening again. You keep repeating the same mistakes, the same things will happen. Now, obviously the FA don't want to replace Southgate because they don't want to go through a process of having to find a replacement. There isn't an obvious one out there. They've kind of restricted themselves to an English manager. They want an English manager. So who is there? Well, Graham Potter's at Chelsea, Eddie Howe at Newcastle. Beyond that, where do you go? Do you go down the route of Lampard or Gerrard again? I mean, this is the problem. There's no ideal candidate. But with Gareth Southgate, it basically is the least worst option. And that is not a way to win a major tournament when you go with the least worst option.
Jules, what was your reaction to the news that he's going to stay on?
I'm delighted. Well done, England. Well done, English FA. Brilliant. At least I know they're not going to win the next Euros. No, I'm kidding. I think he has to win the next Euros. I think you can give him a number of passes if you want. So a pass on this World Cup because they were really good against France. And thin margin, everything, okay, no problem. A pass on the Euros final, although that was at Wembley and they were 1-0 up, maybe. A pass on 4 years ago, okay, but now there's no passes anymore. The Euros, with this squad, with the talent that he has in this squad, with the progress that we've seen on the pitch in this competition, they have to go and win it. And Mark is right, for them to go and win it, Southgate will have to improve because we are not going to go back again on the France game, but he also messed things up massively in his substitutions and what he did on the pitch when England were on top. And I just think he's been good enough, but if they want to keep him, then good for them.
Is it even worth asking you, Stevie?
No. As a Scotsman, I'm delighted. Can you imagine? I mean, do you think the Brazilian team, when they got home, were getting patted on the back? I don't think so, were they?
I don't know.
I don't think so. If Argentina don't win this World Cup, do you think the team's going to get patted on the back? I don't think so. But England get knocked out in the quarter-final, and it's jolly good boys. Well done, round of applause.
What do you want them to say? What do you want the FA to say?
You want the FA to say, you know what, he's done a great job, but we need to, with what we've got and where we've been, we need to start winning a tournament. If you're happy to win semi, get semis and quarterfinals, then guess what's going to happen? That's going to be your ceiling. You need somebody who's got a bit of ruthlessness about him that says, hold on a second, quarterfinals no use. Why are we happy to be in the quarterfinal? That's no good. Where's me medal? I want a medal. I want a winner's medal. Who's going to remember that England get knocked out in the quarterfinals? Nobody.
But isn't that part of the reason, Ali, why he would want to stay on them? Because he does want to take them one step further. And he is getting closer. Obviously not in this World Cup, but it was fine margins.
I will say that I don't know how I come to be the defender of Gareth Southgate, but I will defend Gareth Southgate. We're talking about Harry Kane missing a penalty, right? These are the margins that we're talking about. Your best player, your best attacker, missing a penalty. I would also say that following the game against France, I had a much better feeling about England than I did following the finals in the Euros. That I thought this was a team that wasn't afraid, that wasn't conservative, that attacked France, that created problems for France. And so if I'm projecting into the future, I'm thinking, you know what, this team is trending in the correct direction. The result may not have gone their way. Harry Kane misses a penalty. That changes the narrative. That changes the story. Now, in terms of what the FA could have done is perhaps they take a little bit more time and just really evaluate what their plans are for now and into the future before they go and ratify Gareth Southgate and say, yeah, you know, we want to keep Gareth Southgate around up until 2024, and we want to make sure that he is the guy leading us. They may have been able to take a little bit longer just to really allow all of this to settle down and for them to really process information. But in regards to what we have seen from England, I think they're better now than what they were in the Euros and better than what they were in the last World Cup. Is that reflected in the results? Well, not. Is this a results-oriented business? Yes. And I understand where these guys are coming from. But if I were making these decisions, Gareth Southgate, go on, son.
Well, the players Mark? Go on.
We've got an Englishman sat here. Right. So are you happy?
I am happy.
So you're happy Southgate's going to carry on and take the boys to the Euros and do so well, but unluckily get knocked out, and unlucky Gareth, but you've done a fantastic job. And by the way, he's really good with the media, and he's got a lovely group of boys. They're all lovely boys. They're really nice, and everybody toes the line. It's fantastic. It's great. Super.
They like him as well, don't they, Mark?
Hold on, I haven't got your answer yet.
That shouldn't be a criteria for him to stay. The players might like him, but that doesn't give them the criteria to stay, does it? If you're playing like a manager and they're not to change, it's almost like, well, they hated Fabio Capello because he was tough with them. And, you know, Capello didn't have a great record with England, but he's a guy with a great CV. I think that what this England squad needs is somebody to challenge them a little bit and to make them think. And, you know, I think there are one or two players in that squad that can do better. I think Harry Kane's got a fantastic goals record, but you look at what his performances in recent months, he's not getting away from defenders, he's dropping deeper. He's not giving them a focal point that Olivier Giroud gives to France. So the coach will come in and say, you stay where you should stay, centre forward, stop dropping back to the number 10 role. We want you on there in the end of crossing the six-yard box or putting the ball in the back of the net in the six-yard box, not spraying passes from the centre circle. Southgate hasn't told him that. Southgate played him against Wales when he needed a rest because he went... This is a stronger manager would make bigger decisions. He would find a way to play Phil Foden in a more attacking role. He'd get James Maddison to start. He'd try to make more of Grealish. Southgate is very conservative, which is great for the FA because they're very conservative. Nobody rocked the boat. Let's keep it all nice and safe. Like Stevie says, everyone has a great time. And, you know, oh, well, we got to the quarterfinals. Never mind. We'll do better next time. They need somebody with the edge to take them that next step. And if that means upsetting some of the players who want Southgate to stay, then so be it. Because you have to have a winning mentality to win a World Cup or a European Championship, and they haven't got that.
You just want me to say what you think.
No, I want to know what you think.
I'd like to see him stay on. I think we've seen progress.
Good news.
For the first time in a long time, and I've been in England for a long time.
You know what? I said this last week on the show, and I have not changed my mind one single bit.
Oh, I'm surprised.
Right? As good as you think Southgate has done, and all the players are coming in after Kenny Dalglish, Alec Ferguson, I could name two or three others, right? You know what you would get? What do you mean? 0-0 at half. You come out at half time, it's 0-0. Do you know what they would say? It's not good enough. Well, you want a pat in the back because you played really well, but we've been unlucky. No, no. Next time, this is what we do, this is what you do, this is what you do, and you put it in the back of the net. And I don't want you, Harry Kane. If I see you coming back into the middle of the park again, I'm taking you off. That's what a real manager would do. A guy who's not interested in keeping everybody happy. Everybody's lovely, and Harry's a great captain. Super Harry, we got on really well. Don't want to upset Harry, because he's a captain. That's what a guy with an edge that Augie's talking about would do. He'd say, Harry, you go back in there again, you're off.
And that's all great, but who?
One step at a time.
Right, we'll leave this conversation here. While Jules is still happy as well, because we don't know if he will be tomorrow, but he's definitely happy with this decision. We're going to let him go for the evening. Jules, thanks so much for being with us. The guys will be back, no doubt, giving me stick on Extra Time. Make sure to catch it every single day over on our YouTube channel.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Carabao Cup returns to the calendar next week. Manchester United will be taking on Burnley. Mark Ogden is still with us. We want to talk about this game because we know that we're seeing a very strong Burnley right now in the Championship. They are leading the table right there. So, Mark, will Erik ten Hag put out a strong Manchester United team for this game?
He will put out a strong team, I think. Apart from the French players and the Argentinian players that are in the World Cup final, you'll see United's strongest team because, first of all, a lot of the players are already back. They've been back for 10 days, 14 days, and United need to win a trophy. And, you know, we're having this discussion a while ago about Southgate and how he's not strong enough. Erik ten Hag is strong enough and he wants to win. He's a guy that will upset people to win. So if some of the players that have played in the World Cup don't want to play against Burnley next week, ten Hag will be saying, well, this is your bread and butter. We pay you wages. We need to win a trophy, so you're playing. So there'll be no prospect of this being a second string. It's a massive game for Man United because they haven't won a trophy since 2017, and every opportunity they get, they have to take it.
It's interesting as well when we take a look at Jadon Sancho. We're just splitting the season up here before October and after October, and there's been a marked drop-off after October for the player. Erik ten Hag was actually asked about his availability now that Manchester United will be back in action, and he said, we want to bring Sancho back as quickly as possible, but I can't give a prognosis on when that will be. I have had several talks with Jadon. It's a combination of physical but also mentally. When you don't show it week by week, you can fall out of the squad, which is what happened. Mark, do you know anything more about this situation and what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I think ten Hag's been fairly clear there that Sancho is struggling. It's physical and it's mental as well. And it's not just a case of looking for form on the pitch. I think he's finding it difficult in all aspects of his life. And he has spent the last few weeks in Holland training with coaches that ten Hag's familiar with. So he's not been with the United squad. They're trying everything they can to almost press the reset button with Jadon Sancho. He's a guy that cost over £70 million, a guy that was in the England squad at the Euros, and he's, you know, a really big prospect, but he's struggling, and he's, you know, I think he needs to, like I said, press the reset button on and off the pitch, Jadon Sancho. And I don't expect we'll see him this side of Christmas, because I think he needs to, you know, really get himself back together, you know, physically and mentally. And that's not an easy task. We've seen with a lot of players in recent years, when it gets too much, they have to be given the right treatment and the right, you know, space. And I think United have done that with Sancho, but obviously still an asset to the club. And I think they're desperate to get him back on the pitch. But I don't think there's a timescale on this one.
One thing we have seen in this World Cup is some brilliant performances from Cody Gakpo. Well, the PSV manager, Ruud van Nistelrooy, who knows Manchester United very well, has said, if I have the choice, I prefer the summer. This is with regards to his departure and possibly being in January. He said, but it also could be now. You just know there comes a time when you can't say no. Is that time January, Mark?
It could be, but what I'm led to believe is that Man United aren't going to spend any big money in January, and there's a few reasons for that. The prime reason is that the Glazers want to sell the club, so they're not going to be putting their hands in the pocket to spend any more money. So that it'll be a case of looking for loan moves. We've spoken about, you know, Christian Pulisic is a player that they might take on loan if they can do a deal. Gakpo will probably cost in excess of £50 to £60 million now after his World Cup performances, and that is a big, big leap for Man United in a window where they're not planning to spend. They spent a lot of money in the summer window, more than they expected to spend then. So I think United are going to have to be strategic, but they do have to replace Ronaldo, who went for nothing. He's freed up a lot of money in the wage bill, but I still think that a big fee for Gakpo, I just think January is not the time for United to do it. I think they're going to wait till the summer.
There's obviously a lot going on behind the scenes at Manchester United. Avram Glazer was stopped by The Athletic after the France-Morocco game and asked about his selling the club. He said it's not necessarily a sale, it's a process, and we're going forward with the process. So we'll see what happens. What does this mean, Mark?
I think he was just caught on the back foot there. It's definitely a sale. And I think in an ideal world, they'd look to sell a little bit off. They'd look to sell a percentage off. But the stakes are so high now at Man United. They've got to raise over maybe £250 million to update Old Trafford, if not rebuild it. They've got to pay off the debt on the players. They owe about £300 million in unpaid transfer fees, which is an accumulation of fees that it's not to pay it all at once, but it's still going to pay it back. The debt is now over £500 million. So all of a sudden, they've got £1 billion of debt or outgoings that they need to cover, and they can't do it. So the only way that they can do it is to get out. And they're going to have to get out by selling the club and let somebody come in who's got the money to do it. But, you know, Man United have got a lot of problems off the pitch financially with the ground. The ground is now a mess. You know, Stephen Nicol left the UK, 20 odd years ago, and it's not been touched in that time. So Steve would go to Old Trafford now and he won't notice any difference. They need to spend some money on it to upgrade it, to make it like the stadiums in the rest of the country. So the Glazers just run out of road. They've run out of road, they've run out of money. It's a sale, and the sooner they get it sold, the better for everybody.
Now, before we do let you go, Mark, you wanted to talk about Marcus Rashford and his contract status. What have you got to tell us?
Yeah, well, the situation with Rashford, all of a sudden, he's had a good World Cup, Rashford. You know, he could come back as United's star player with Ronaldo going, but I think people have forgotten that his contract expires this summer, and United will trigger the option of an extra 12 months, but that means he's got 18 months in his contract, so there's no contract agreed yet. Now, Marcus Rashford is arguably one of his biggest assets now, and we're still waiting to see what happens. Now, for me, I get to the summer, and if he won't sign a contract, I'd sell Marcus Rashford. I don't think he's done enough at United to prove he is someone that he can rely upon to score 20 goals a season. He's had good moments, he's had bad moments, but if Man United are rebuilding, if Marcus Rashford wants to be a part of it, he's going to have to commit to it fairly soon, because I think he's a player they could sell next summer for money. And I think the fan base would be quite split, actually. I think some would be happy to let him go, some would want him to stay. But I don't think Rashford is consistent enough for United to say, we'll pay you what you want, come and sign this contract, Marcus. So there's a big issue to be addressed over Marcus Rashford for the next 6 months, whether he wants to stay, whether United's prepared to pay him what he wants, or whether Ten Hag is prepared to say, look, you know, you're not for me, I'll let you move on.
Has he done enough, Stevie, to stay on and to convince them to...
I've got to agree with Augie, because you'll still get good money for him. I mean, 7 years, maybe eight, but yet, is he really a starter? I mean, you couldn't turn around now and say, Marcus Rashford has to start for Man United. You couldn't do that. So if you can get a good amount of money for him, then you do it and you move on.
But he has been better this season, Ali, and he's even addressed some of the situation himself. He said that maybe he was concentrating on some other things off the pitch.
Listen,
now he's focused fully on his football.
Listen to what you just said.
Right.
Well, he has been better. Do you know what I mean? Does that mean you deserve a new contract, Ali?
And here's the thing. I don't want to be a cynic, because why? We have enough people in the world who are cynics. But I will ask the question. players that are coming towards the end of a contract, and this is not just a reality in professional football, it's a reality in professional sports. Players who are coming to the end of the contract have a way of improving their performance as that contract is running out, knowing full well that there is a payday at the end of it. And I don't think that this is the motivation for Marcus Rashford. I don't think this is why he has been better. But you can't just rely upon what you have seen over the last couple of months and make decisions in the long term and ignore what has happened over the last few years. So you focus on the last couple of months, you say, you know what, this guy could be the guy for us. But if you see before then and what has been his history with Manchester United, you kind of go, no, I don't think he's the guy for us in the future. I think if Manchester United is thinking about what would be a change, a radical change, and it has begun with, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo walking out the door, Marcus Rashford would probably be the next one to go. Not because he's a cloud like Cristiano Ronaldo and hovers over the club, but just because I think it's time to look for somebody else to try to be the answer that he hasn't been.
Well, you can keep up to date with all the latest transfer talk on our website. We thank Mark Ogden for being with us. We'll be hearing him soon, and you can no doubt see some stories from him over on our website too, transfertalk on ESPN.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. And Croatia finished third in the World Cup after a 2-1 win over Morocco in the third, fourth place game. Josko Vardiol scoring a brilliant header in the 7th minute. 2 minutes later, Dari headed in from close range. That levelled things out, but then Mislav Orsic restored the lead just before half-time. That means that Croatia are third, Morocco are fourth, but they did make history as the best finishing African side in the history of the competition. But it is Guardiol I would like to talk about. We'll get to that in just a moment. Before we do, let's give some credit to Morocco and hear from their fans.
What a World Cup for Morocco.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. First African team to make it to the semi-final, and I think that's a great first leap.
What Morocco achieved tonight is the history. We create a history for Arab and for Africa.
Nia, we call it Nia in Arabic, you know. It's like you just believe, okay, you have to believe in life. So when you believe and you work, you can reach your goals. And they showed us this.
In 2026, we can say the last word, Morocco don't lose, Morocco learns. They will come back stronger in 2026.
We are very proud of them, even if we didn't win, actually, but we won the heart of the world.
We've spent so many nights thinking, is this real or we are just dreaming, actually?
A big congrats to Morocco. Shaka Hislop prized himself out of bed to get to this game. Oh. But apparently he didn't stay awake throughout the game, according to Julien Laurent.
What?
Who's been telling tales on you, Shaka Hislop.
What?
No, he was looking at his notes.
He's looking at his
notes. You cannot trust Julien with these tall tales, Kay. You know that.
What was it like to be there, Shaka?
It doesn't even
peaceful.
I can't remember.
It was fantastic. No, in all seriousness, it really was. It really was fantastic. It was a different atmosphere to this one, particularly for the Moroccan fans. Again, they outnumber the Croatian fans as you'd expect, 9-1 thereabouts. And I'm being kind. But as you saw towards the end of their semi-final loss to France, this was more about an appreciation of the tournament in whole than an expectation of the team to win. And in a way, the team kind of played exactly to that. I cannot think of a team that started any game at any start stage of this tournament worse than Morocco in the opening exchanges. Bononelli scored in his own goal. And that kind of painted the picture of maybe the first 10 or 15 minutes. No real surprise for Croatia to go ahead. Very well with goal, Gvardiol scoring. And then Morocco equalised. And in all honesty, I don't think Livakovic touched the ball before Morocco equalised. And that kind of spoke to the imbalance in this. Then you also scored, as you mentioned, Kate, just before the halftime break. I very well will go. Croatia were the better of the two teams. And then the second half petered out a little bit, as sometimes third, fourth place games go. There was a little bit of tension, but I thought that was more around the referee's handling of the game that forced things to kind of boil over. But in all honesty, it was a celebration of Morocco's run in this tournament and so many of the old guard for Croatia coming to the end of their own times. I was surprised to see the likes of Luka Modric play, like to see him start, let alone play the full 90 minutes. But it really was good to see them out there.
Tell us about some of the new guards at Croatia. Tell us how Gvardiol looked.
That was a really well-taken goal. We've spoken a lot about his defending all tournament long, and that's piqued interest up all over Europe. But then the header, it was well-worked from Croatia. He stays up, and he throws himself Van Persie-esque at this one, and it really was a very well-taken goal. I can't emphasize that enough, you know. It kind of was a statement end to a brilliant tournament for him, when in the semi-final, the last we remember really of Gvardiol is being turned inside out by Messi. Let's be honest, he's not the first, and I'm sure won't be the last to suffer that fate. So it was good to see him, given his tournament, good to see him finish on this relative high.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be too ashamed of that. That was vintage Messi in that moment. But this player has been linked with Real Madrid. He's been linked with Chelsea. It's Real Madrid, though, that I want to talk about. Obviously, he's looked great in this tournament, but why are they going to get another centre-back in?
And a left-sided centre-back. And so you think about who is the player that he would be backing up, and that would be David Alaba, who has been outstanding for Real Madrid. And I don't think at this point in his career you want to put him out on as a left back, which perhaps would be a solution to the extra numbers that you have Gvardiol as the center back and then you have Alaba as the center back. But one of the things that has been so critical for the success of Real Madrid in that center back pairing is that Alaba kind of gives the organization, gives the leadership, and Militao gives the athleticism and the physicality. And they have a very good understanding together. And behind them is Antonio Rudiger. So in terms of needs, and which is a difference from wants, for the needs of Real Madrid, I don't think that they need another center back. And I don't know that right now is the moment to go and spend all this money that Gvardiol, given how hot he was in the World Cup, how his price has gone up, I don't know that this is when you go chasing this one down if you're Real Madrid.
You say all this money. There are reports that Chelsea had a 90 million offer rejected by Leipzig. So this is looking at upwards of 100 million at least, Stevie.
I wouldn't pay upwards of 100 million for them. Look, you kind of have to look at the Van Dijk situation. Van Dijk was 80 million. And you're getting the finished product. You're getting the guy who you know is going to step in tomorrow and just be the complete and utter leader. So if you're going to spend over 100 million on Gvardiol and you don't actually need him, then you can't do it. You can't do it. I mean, I understand that the best teams are always looking to get better, but that just seems a little too much, over 100 million. Because that's probably what it's going to take. It shouldn't. I don't believe he's worth that. Yes, he's a great defender. But no, not 100 plus. And Real Madrid don't need him.
Too much. And I think 5 minutes might have been too much for the cameo from Shaka Hislop tonight. So we're going to let him go
what?
And get some rest. It's been a very long day for him.
Has it?
It has.
Apparently.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
He deserves some rest. Thanks for being with us, Shekhar. Oh. You can see how Real Madrid's defence are looking over the new year because La Liga is back on the calendar. Every single game available on ESPN+. Be sure to always catch it with us. Before that, though, we have a slate of Copa del Rey games coming up, starting on Tuesday all the way through Thursday. All of these games available on ESPN+. Make sure to check out the ones that interest you.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Been a dramatic situation and scenes in the A-Leagues. Fans are actually angered after the leagues have sold rights to host its grand finals to the New South Wales government, with Sydney hosting showpiece events for the men and the women's games for the next 3 years. It was an eight-figure deal. Why is this a problem? Well, tradition, it has said that it's always been that the title deciders play at home when it comes to this. Whoever finished highest in the league gets to play that title deciding game at home. Anyway, it's caused outrage. Fans have been vocal about their displeasure. It raises the prospect of two teams from outside of Sydney contesting a final at a Sydney stadium. It would mean potentially fans are left behind because it was their team, not from Sydney, that would be playing in this final. They're called the league greedy. Aussies will be facing the fact that they're having to take on record airfares right now because of the way that things are looking, the accommodation costs. It also seems that these tensions have been spilling over. Obviously, the fans are angry. And what we saw in the Melbourne Derby was pretty shocking, to say the least. Both sets of fans had been throwing flares, but the situation got worse as one hit a cameraman. City goalkeeper Tom Glover picked one up off the ground, threw it back into the stand. This happened twice. Anyway, that's where Victory support was. They ended up invading the pitch.
You know, the goalkeeper shouldn't be throwing that back in the stand, that's for sure. But I do get the feeling that this was going to happen anyway. You know, you've got a bunch of supporters who, in my opinion, even before the ball was kicked, were hell-bent on causing trouble. And, yes, what happened to start it shouldn't have happened. But you know what? I think it was a matter of time before something kicked them off and gave them an excuse to get on the field and do what they did.
So he got hit in the face, as you just saw there, by a metal bucket. The referee was also injured. Play was suspended, and then later the game was called off completely.
And I'm not excusing the behavior from the goalkeeper and throwing a flare back into the stands. I'm certainly not excusing the behavior of the fans who were the ones that were throwing the flares onto the field to begin with. But I would ask the question, if there have been tensions all around this league because of this decision that you just mentioned there, Kay, and you knew that this was bubbling and you knew that this was simmering, Where is the security? Where are the precautions that you take as a league or as a club or as whatever to make sure that you are on high alert, knowing full well that there is a trend and a movement and a tendency for this to blow up at some point? You have to jump ahead of the curve. You have to jump ahead of this and make sure that you have enough police presence, enough security presence to discourage this behavior. But when you see that the only sense of security that you get in this particular incident is one guy in a vest going like this, trying to protect the goalkeeper, I'm going to tell you, that's not enough. That's not enough. People only come onto the field because they know that they can do it, that they have access. They're not afraid of what the consequences are going to be. They're not afraid of the security there. They're saying, you know what? We're free to go. Let's go. This guy's over here. This whoever the security people are here with a vest, they're not going to do anything to stop us because they don't have the resources to stop you. So for me, it's an oversight. It's an oversight by the club. It's an oversight by the league. It's not understanding what the controversy is and how to address it properly before it gets to this point.
Yeah, obviously awful scenes to see. Very upsetting to see them too. There'll no doubt be a lot more talk about it on the latest Gab and Jules podcast. Be sure to download that wherever you do get your podcasts.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Well, that's all we've got time for on the show here, except we're going to stick around to answer your questions and your tweets that you've been sending in on Extra Time. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you in a minute. Welcome to Extra Time, presented by Globant. Ali Moreno, Stevie Nicol, and Kay Murray. Just the three of us for this one today.
Oh, nice and cosy, yeah.
Cool as you like. Cosy. Michael Matthews sending in the first question. It says, Stevie, should Liverpool consider a short-term deal to sign Depay from Barcelona to cover Diaz and Jota injuries as he can play on the left and centre and only has 6 months remaining on his contract?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Guy's got ability. If Barcelona, considering the situation they're in financially, maybe it could work. It certainly would be. Look, if Liverpool had Depay on the bench to come on, that wouldn't be a bad thing. Considering how difficult these things seem to always be to work out, it probably seems unlikely. But as far as being a good idea, absolutely.
Would that be attractive for Depay?
I suppose it would be for Depay, but he better be willing to press and to run around and defend high energy, which isn't always his strength. But there would have to be a change in the mindset and what the expectations would be for him as a player. And while he can play down the middle, I don't think that's where he's most comfortable. He likes to come from the left-hand side. And if he's going to do that, he better be willing to do some running.
All right, speaking of Depay's pressing, there's a stat. We had this in the full show. Fewest interventions in the defending third. He's behind Akram Afif of Qatar. Yeah.
Gets a shout-out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go on, Akram.
Mbappe top in the list, and then Ronaldo and Messi behind Depay. Depay a little bit younger, it has to be said as well, than Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi.
Okay. So not a good idea then.
I don't know. Whatever you guys want.
Stats don't back it up. It's amazing.
Are you going to back it up now?
It's amazing what a large kick up the backside can do to some players. Mm. Ali was talking earlier on about it's amazing how when players' contracts are coming to an end, all of a sudden they get a burst of energy.
What a
So maybe Mr. Depay would get a burst of energy.
Maybe he will. Okay, to all, in paying tribute to Mihailovic, where would you rank him in terms of free kick takers? Is he in the same class as Pirlo, Juninho, Beckham and Messi?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was the generation after me, so as I'm finishing, he's getting into it. And of course, in the 90s in particular, we started getting a lot of Italian football, because that's where the money was then, and all the players were going there. And so that was the first time I remember seeing Mihailovic's free kicks. You know, he would, as a player, he was a good player. But as a free kick taker, he was as good as any of those names. You know, he could smash it through a gap with power. He could bend it up and over the wall, under the crossbar. He could whip it round the outside. I mean, this guy scored every sort of free kick that you can imagine on a regular basis. Not hitting the wall 10 times and then the next time we went in.
Who are you talking about?
This guy was dynamite.
Who does that? The hitter in the wall all the time.
A certain Cristiano. Oh. What's his second name again?
Who's that? Nastasi Mihailovic.
Hold on a minute. Let's be honest. To be fair to Ronaldo, it was the latter years of his career where he was hitting the wall a lot. He did score a few from the feet. Come on. Let's be honest.
I just asked you a question.
Let's not, you know, the guy could take a free kick, but just unfortunately, he kind of ran out of juice a little bit towards the end.
Ale, where was this attacking football from Croatia in the Argentina game?
Well, I don't know that they did something different today than what they did against Argentina. It's just they're playing against a team that is not as strong as Argentina in Morocco. But they still today show some of their deficiencies. Once they get into the attacking half, into the final third, while it was a great goal from Orsic, a lot of the plays were breaking down once they got up until that point. It's just, for them, they just don't quite have the same talent level in the final third than they do in the middle third. So when you think of Brozovic and you think of Kovacic and, of course, Luka Modric, and then you project forward and now you're depending on Kramaric and Pekovic. And these are guys that are serviceable players, but they're certainly not elite talent. And so the attacking football for Croatia, I don't think it's so much dependent upon who they play. It's just that's the players that they are. They're limited in that part of the field.
They play the same way regardless of the opposition. And they think that if we're at our best, we're a match for anybody. And sometimes they're not at their best. But they're not a side. You know, we were talking in the show about, you know, our Argentina going to play three at the back, they're going to play four at the back. But Croatia don't do that. They know exactly. Every single person in that squad, those players, the coaches, they know exactly what they're trying to do. And regardless of the opposition, that's what they try and do.
It just so happens as well that they came up against the vintage Messi on that day, which also doesn't help.
On many levels, Croatia's performance against Argentina, you have to remember that for the first 20 minutes or so, it was very much all Croatia all the time, and Argentina were having difficulties getting a hold of the ball, and the penalty happened, and that sort of changed the game itself. And then after that, Croatia seemed to gather some more momentum, and then that goal from Julian Alvarez, the touch and tackle happens again. After that, it was very difficult for them to come back, but it wasn't like they were completely and totally outplayed by Argentina. They were outplayed in moments, and certainly the third goal is the best example of that, and the genius of Lionel Messi.
Both of Manchester United's first-choice centre-backs have made the final of the World Cup. What does Stevie make of this development, and does he think that United finally have a solid defence to build their team on?
Well, I don't think it's a surprise that Varane has done what he's done. You know what you're getting? You buy a world-class defender, and that's what he does. You know, regardless of what you think of his partner beside him, generally at United and Martinez, they're a good combination.
Did you just say something nice about Martinez?
No, I mean, him and Varane get on well, yeah.
No.
If you want to start asking a different question of where's the deficiency, then that's a different answer.
No.
But as a partnership, they've actually done well.
There was nothing nice about that, because in between the lines there, he said, whatever you may think of his partner.
That was painful.
Whatever you may think of Varane's partner.
I thought I was being nice there.
Knowing Stevie, that pretty much was him being nice,
right? Very positive.
As I said, as individuals, there are different answers. As a partnership, they've done well.
All right, we'll take that. We'll take it.
Well, let me give you an example, right? John Stones and Harry Maguire were great together for England. made very few mistakes, and we're a good, solid partnership, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you want to start talking about them individually, then that's a different conversation.
Right. So he had to bring up Ronaldo. Now he's had to bring up England. Let's
just trying to deflect.
Who's your X factor for either France or Argentina tomorrow?
Who's your X factor?
You have the obvious ones, right? But let's go.
But even Hernan Crespo said it might not be the obvious one in the final.
Well, he's taking a right chance, isn't he?
if we ignore the obvious ones,
okay.
Messi.
Because they're the triple X factor.
Yeah, Messi, Mbappe, Griezmann. I'm thinking if you're Argentina, you have to be very mindful of what happens on the opposite side with Ousmane Dembele, because as inconsistent as he has been and continues to be, on a good day, he can really take advantage of whoever is on that left-hand side for Argentina defensively. So Dembele on 1v1 situations, if you're paying attention to everybody over here and don't pay attention to that guy, he may just take advantage of it. So he could be a difference maker just because we are thinking of everybody else and not paying enough attention to Dembele.
You probably say that France have got more. If you take Messi and Mbappe out, you probably say that France have got more X-factor guys that maybe would score a goal than Argentina. I think that would be the best answer to that.
Okay. What kind of dog does Stevie have? Because it's so famous now. Haggis.
Haggis is a Newfoundland.
He's coming. He's coming. Just wait for it.
He's disappeared.
Wait for it.
Listen.
You just wait. This is great camera work by you, Stevie. Oh.
Stevie sent this to Dan after Kane missed a penalty against France.
For those that didn't see it, what happened was when Harry Kane missed the penalty,
he decided to try and upset a huge England fan in Dan Thomas.
I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a video of Haggis getting two treats because Harry Kane kicked it over the crossbar.
Right, it all makes sense.
Unfortunately, my videoing skills, as you see, were rather off on that particular occasion.
Wait. On that particular occasion?
Yeah, because normally I'm pretty good.
Oh, all right. Well,
that's what happens when you kick a man while he's down.
Yeah, karma, I guess.
But anyway, tell us more about Haggis.
Well, Haggis got his two treats anyway. And a lot more when the final whistle went.
How old is he? What's his character like?
Oh, I'll tell you what, he's 1 year old. He's a year. And the thing that people don't realise about Newfies is they have they're called a Newfosaurus. In the Newfie world, people call them a Newfosaurus or a Raptosaurus.
In the Newfie world?
Because when you take them a walk, they'll jump at you. Now, when you've got a dog that's 130 pounds, takes a run and jumps at you, it's quite a challenge. Let's just say that when we go a walk, Eleanor prefers that I take the lead. Because up until about 18 months, that's what they do. And then they calm down and they stop doing all that stuff. They're very mouthy as well. So when they're excited to see you, they're like try to eat your hand or your arm or anything that gets in the road. You know, people see them and they see this big cuddly, soft thing that just lies around and does nothing. Well, they don't. They're very active. Never leave you alone. They're always back. Regardless of where you are, and I mean where you are, they're beside you.
Right. So, and you described him as a Raptosaurus. What is a Raptosaurus? Or were you thinking Velociraptor?
When you look at all the sauruses.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know that there is a raptor.
Well, you see them, they go on their back legs and their two arms are like that. You know when you see the kids' toys?
That's a Tyrannosaurus.
Okay, a Tyrannosaurus, yeah. So when you see a Tyrannosaurus Rex, right, and it's up on its back legs,
yes.
It's got two on the ground and two like that.
Yeah, and it's more like
that. Well, that's what he does, and he jumps at you, and that's what other people's dogs do, like Newfies.
Newfies.
But they grow out of it.
In the Newfie world.
In the Newfie world.
In the Newfie world.
Okay.
They grow out of it. Yeah. I can assure you. When there's a 130-pound dog jumping at you, You know all about it.
So that is an insight to the new view world and haggis.
And the Soros knowledge.
He's a good boy.
It's a Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's a Toronto fan, all right? That'll do it for the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you so much for sending your questions and thanks for telling us about the new view world.
No problem.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.